Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
Welcome to this week's edition of Says You. As always, a show chocked full of words and wit. And today, an extra, our tribute to Parisian landmarks.
Two Dutchmen and a Peruvian walk into the Eiffel Tower.
One says, this is nothing, you should see the Andes. And right, they, what? Yeah.
If you stand directly at the base of the Eiffel Tower, yes, and look all the way up to the top,
yes,
you're going to fall over.
Yeah.
That's why they call it the Eiffel Tower.
And again this week, we pledge to bring to you the type of presentation you've come to expect from Says You. Precise, polished, professional.
I'm only missing one page out of my script, and that would intimidate a lesser man. This might be a much shorter show than we know about.
Says You, next.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. In his last Sunday blessing before he steps down on Thursday, Pope Benedict said he is not abandoning the church. The BBC's James Robbins watched the address in St. Peter's Square.
Pope Benedict, acknowledging the applause of the huge crowd spread out in front of me across the whole breadth of St. Peter's Square in front of the great basilica. It's not his last public appearance. That will be on Wednesday when he gives his last audience. But it is one of his farewells to some of the most faithful in the church, a church battered by allegations both of sexual abuse by priests and of mishandled financial dealings.
The BBC's James Robbins reporting. Also in Italy today, former Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi got some attention. Berlusconi getting his picture taken as he cast his ballot in today's election. He's seeking to make a comeback as Italians choose a new parliament. Political analyst James Walston at the American University of Rome says only a solid parliamentary majority will ensure that Italy remains on track toward financial stability.
If there's instability, then the Italian economic problems, and with them the European economic problems, will start again, and we will be back to more or less where we were in the summer of 2011. So it's stability against instability.
The National Governors Association is meeting in Washington just days before massive federal spending cuts are due to kick in. NPR's Jim Hawk reports that governors from both parties are calling for a last-minute budget deal.
Colorado's Democratic Governor John Hickenlooper says no state leaders want the kind of federal budget cuts that are coming Friday.
There can't be any question. This is something that nobody wants, right? It's not a balanced, a thoughtful compromise or a set of choices.
Republican Governor Pat McCrory of North Carolina thinks it isn't too late to fix the budget if congressional leaders and the president can sit down together.
We want Washington to fix its problem. And right now I want to ask the president, along with congressional leaders, to get in a room and do what governors are doing across this nation and start reading their budget and making the tough decisions as opposed to across-the-board cuts.
This evening, governors and their spouses will socialize with the president and Mrs. Obama at the White House, and on Monday, governors will return for a meeting with the president and vice president. Jim Hawk, NPR News, Washington.
Republicans and Democrats are going back and forth on the automatic spending cuts. GOP Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma says they won't have as much impact as the Obama administration claims.
It's a terrible way to cut spending. I don't disagree with that. But to not cut 2.5% out of the total budget over a year when it's twice the size it was 10 years ago? Give me a break.
Coburn there speaking on Fox News Sunday. And you're listening to NPR News from Washington. Secretary of State John Kerry has left Washington for a 10-day tour of European capitals and the Middle East. The civil war in Syria is on his agenda, but his trip is also expected to focus on the conflicts in Mali and Afghanistan and on Iran's disputed nuclear program. Workers at Daytona International Speedway in Florida have been working to make sure the track is ready for today's Daytona 500, NASCAR's season opening race and its biggest. They labored well into the night after a crash yesterday sent one car airborne and debris flying into the stands, injuring at least 28 fans. Daytona President Joey Chitwood.
We transported immediately those patients that needed critical assistance. You know, we'll review ourselves in terms of where the debris flew and what we need to do with that. But it was the grandstands immediately outside of the fence where the car hit.
NASCAR officials say today's main event will go on as planned. The Daytona 500 features Danica Patrick, the first woman to start the race on the pole position. But as NPR's Allison Keyes reports, Patrick has more than just the race on her plate.
From the cable networks to the newspapers, everyone is talking about how Patrick will bring new fans to the sport, including little girls who are in awe of the glamorous driver in the sizzling bright green car. Patrick is the first woman to win a Sprint Cup pole, and while pundits are chewing over whether it's a good or bad thing to start such a race at the front, she's talking about her chances of winning, even though she's a rookie.
I will do the best job I can. I believe I do have a chance to win. I do believe experience would help, but it doesn't mean that I don't have a chance to win.
Some of the top drivers in the sport, including Jimmy Johnson, have brought their daughters to meet Patrick, and her crew has been handing out lug nuts to little girls who want souvenirs. Allison Keyes, NPR News.
And I'm Giles Snyder in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Cy Sims Foundation, supporter of the Cy Sims School of Business and Executive MBA program at Yeshiva University.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
Support for Says You in Weston, Massachusetts comes from Regis College. Graduate and undergraduate programs in the arts and sciences. On the web at regiscollege.edu.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Schur.
Thank you. From the stage of the Eleanor Welsh Casey Theater on the campus of Regis College in Weston, Massachusetts, welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. He enters the new year ready for anything, yet prepared for nothing. Tony Khan. She begins the year refreshed and renewed and hopes not to be rebuffed. Francine Akbar. And he looks to the future with optimism and hope, but his passport's up to date just in case. Mr. Flash Wiley. And who will lead?
Refreshed and renewed.
Francine. Will be the captain. To my left, team two, a heck of a guy, a prince among men, a gentleman's gentleman, Arnie Reisman. Her credentials are impeccable, her background unblemished, her sinuses compromised. Paula Lyon. And her reputation precedes her. We just hope that won't trip her up. Miss Carolyn Fay Fox. Captain by...
Arnie.
For those of you on radio.
Mr. Reisman raises his hand.
Right.
Correct answers are worth 10 points, or whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners, grab a pen and paper. Let's begin... As is our yearly custom, we take a moment to acknowledge the winners of this year's Ig Nobel Prizes. Oh, I see you're familiar with the Ig Nobel Prizes. Awards presented annually at Harvard University to researchers and scholars whose work at first makes people laugh, but then makes them think. So from the clues provided, please tell us what accomplishments were most recently so immortalized. Carolyn?
Yes.
The Psychology Prize went to Dutch researchers Anita Erland and Rolf Zwan and Peruvian Tulio Guadalupe for their research involving the Eiffel Tower and a Wii game system balance board. What psychobiomechanical breakthrough did they uncover?
I've lost a lot of sleep over this, Richard.
Yeah, I understand. The Eiffel Tower.
Could you say that again?
Eiffel Tower.
The Eiffel Tower and a Wii 2 game system balance board. What psycho-biomechanical breakthrough did they uncover?
It has something to do with jumping over the Eiffel Tower.
It does not. Thank goodness.
Is that balance board a Ouija board?
No, Wii.
It's the Wii game system.
Oh, Wii game system. Okay.
All right. It's a game system.
This is one of the oddest things that I've ever seen, but it's interesting.
Does it have
It's so odd, it leaves me speechless.
Yes.
Does it have anything to do with the height of the Eiffel Tower?
Yes, in a way it does.
In a way.
But
it's his favorite phrase.
It's observational.
Observational. Now I am on the first floor.
Okay.
Wii. Now I am on the second floor.
We?
And I see we're not getting very far here.
No.
I think that's the Trifle Tower.
Biomechanical. Does it have to do with estimating the height of something?
In a sense, yes.
In a sense. Two Dutchmen and a Peruvian walk into the Eiffel Tower.
For that, you get 4 points.
Right.
For that, you get 4 points.
One says, this is nothing. You should see the Andes.
And right. Yeah. 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 Is that biomechanical, or you're just happy to see me?
Yes. Does the other side want to help in this problem?
I mean, who would know these things anyway?
If you stand directly at the base of the Eiffel Tower and look all the way up to the top, you're going to fall over.
Yeah.
Even if you're on the Wii balance board.
Even if you're on the Wii balance board.
That's why they call it the Eiffel Tower.
I don't see how you can wring very much more out of this.
Yeah, right.
Anyone in the audience have any clue about this?
Is it about climbing up?
From the fourth row in the audience, that is a correct answer. And listen to this. The Eiffel Tower looks smaller if you lean to the left.
Really?
Yes. Because people generally perceive numbers increasing from left to right, and the same seems true of observational phenomenon. If you lean to the left, the Eiffel Tower seems shorter.
Did they spend money on this?
Yeah, right. And they won awards.
And how does
this explains
society?
Why a hero sandwich goes a lot slower the first half.
It does, actually. Try this one, Flash.
Did you give us anything?
Yeah, 4 points.
Four points for them.
Try this one, Flash. The prize in anatomy went to the Dutch-American team of Frans de Waal and Jennifer Pokorny for the research they did into simian posterior image recognition.
Well,
what discovery did they make?
I know that simians are sexually stimulated, actually humans too, by the posteriors of the opposite sex.
That's true.
And
they can recognize them from 50 miles away. What?
Yeah, so I guess you can tell your mate from their posterior.
In a photo.
Not a photo. I don't know.
In a photo is exactly right.
All right.
That's 10 points.
All right.
In a photo?
Chimpanzees can identify other chimpanzees by seeing photographs of their respective rear ends.
Wait a minute.
And that's the butt of that joke.
And what is the proof of the recognition factor?
Yeah, I didn't ask that. I didn't ask you.
Because the male says when he sees the females, no, I don't think it's too big.
Yeah, right.
Does this video make me look fat?
He knows
It was a lot of fun back in the green room during halftime. All right, Arnie, try this one. The Fluid Dynamics Prize went to the international team of Kretschnikoff and Meyer for their work in the logistics of latte leveling. What did their studies reveal?
There's no taste like foam.
Once again, I caution you not to lower their standards.
Right. They discovered that you won't get money unless one of you is Dutch.
That's right. The logistics of latte leveling. What did they find out?
Fluid dynamics, Brian. They figured out how to get the latte not to go above the cup.
Yeah, they don't rim. Slant the cup and it doesn't spill. Big whoop.
Well, this is a...
Yeah.
Fluid dynamics, don't spill it.
Yes,
you know?
This is about not spilling.
Not spilling.
Can you imagine when you wouldn't spill?
When you're pouring.
No.
When you're brewing it.
No. When you're leaving it alone.
When you're leaving it alone.
I think the other side
when
does have an
when you're frothing the milk, what?
No, it is not that. Other side, help them out.
When you're serving it.
Well.
On the tray, carrying it.
When you are walking or carrying it, they learned how coffee sloshes back and forth in a cup carried by a person walking to work.
Okay.
I don't have any idea what this is.
And
I'm giving you another 4 points because I'm in a real good mood.
That's good.
Is there a store that has made use of this particular information? I mean, should we go to Starbucks for the promise of never spilling our coffee on the way to work?
I think this probably has more to do with containers.
Containers.
And how they manufacture the containers in which it's carried.
I think the price alone would keep you from spilling a single drop.
Yeah, that's right.
Try this one, Francine. This is great. The prize for literature went to the U.S. Government General Accountability Office for writing something that could only be produced by the U.S. Government General Accountability Office. Care to try?
A 600-page book on how to shorten reports from the government.
He's exactly right.
Right, right.
He is exactly right.
Is that right?
Makes sense.
They issued a report about reports that recommends the preparation of a report about the report about reports about reports.
And the musical opens next spring.
Exactly.
Number one. America, number one.
Try this one, Paula. The Neuroscience Prize. Neuroscience. Interesting. The Neuroscience Prize went to the U.S. team of Bennett, Baird, Miller, and Walford, my attorneys, for a study in the area of postmortem marine encephalology. What did they demonstrate?
Encephalology. Well, it's water on the brain.
Postmortem marine encephalology.
Well, they discovered they shouldn't put, dead fish in the water. I mean, I don't know.
They discovered something about dead fish, all right.
They rot from the head.
Oh, I love that.
They rot from the head down.
I'm giving you points for that. That's the old, the old...
They rot from the head down.
They rot from the head down. Fish
die by drowning.
We've heard sillier things.
They don't leave
they
a suicide
They get water on
note.
The brain.
You know what? I'm going to give you the 10 points. Right. It's not that they get water on the brain. By using sophisticated instruments and statistics, they found meaningful brain activity in dead salmon.
How meaningful?
It's meaningful. How meaningful?
I don't know. You're going to have to look this up. I recommend that you all go to the website of the Ig Nobel Prizes and look these up, because the research actually is quite meaningful. And finally, Tony, the SKN company of Russia claimed the Peace Prize this year for their work in ordnance crystalline conversion. What did they achieve?
Well, I know that the Russians have done remarkable work lately in determining if your blood reverses direction when you sneeze real hard.
I think it was turning bombs into candy floss.
Not a Dick Andy floss, but something...
Turning bombs into crystal. You carry easily with you.
A certain kind of crystal, actually.
Goblets.
Okay, so...
Crystalline structure, I should say.
Right.
Crystalline structure.
Crystalline.
Well, crystalline structure, I mean, salt can be crystalline
structure. Yeah, so can something a lot more valuable.
A lot more valuable than salt.
Diamonds.
Diamonds. Diamonds is exactly right.
Diamonds.
This company has converted old Russian ammunition into new diamonds.
Wow.
Talk about your plowshares into swords into plowshares.
So it's like in Spanish they say te amo.
Te amo.
How many points do I give him for that?
That's a 10.
I'm going to give you 5 points for your answer. And that was our annual tribute to the Ig Nobel Awards. So, I love that thing. I hope you all go on the site and check it out. Let's go on to round two, which is played with a little musical help from Fiddlers 2 in the persons of Ann Hooper and Isabel Oliart. It is the first of the Says You Bluffing words. Arnie, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one is the actual definition. The others have cards that say, please bluff. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot, good enough to fool Francine's team. 10 points up for grabs to Francine if she can find the bluffer, or to you, Arnie, if she can't. A few seconds, musically enhanced, to come up with a definition for the word Zenana. Z-E-N-A-N-A, Zenana. Ladies?
Says You makes its sesquiannual return to Seattle, Washington, as part of this spring schedule of live performances. On June 22nd and 23rd, we'll become Soulcesters, as we once again invade Town Hall with special guests and musical surprises. Tickets, information, and details for these matinees are available, of course, at saysyou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. Where if you follow that Join the Fun link, we'll show you how to join the fun. Other dates for this spring will be posted in the next few days on the site, and we hope you'll keep your eyes peeled to see if this is the year you'll be able to catch a live performance of the show. And who knows, maybe we'll find out who first peeled one's eyes. Says You returns after this from home. Spring of Eternal Hope begins next month with a live performance in Portland, Maine. On Saturday, March 23rd, we'll bring a blizzard of bon mots to Hannaford Hall at the University of Southern Maine. Then in April, it's on to Vermont, the weekend of April 20th, for an evening of Green Mountain Quips, Questions, and Quotes. Tickets, information, and details available, of course, at saysyou.net. S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. So remember, that's Saturday, March 23rd in Portland, Maine, and Sunday, April 20th in the hills of Vermont. It's Northern Tier Statements from Says You.
That was Fiddler's Two. That is Ann Hooper and Isabel Oliart. Thank you, ladies. Let's take a moment and thank our scorekeepers. That's Mr. Marcel Oliart on the left and Mr. Aaron Crichton on the right. Thanks very much, you guys, for keeping the score. We have had a few moments with the word Zenana. We will go first to Carolyn Faye Fox.
Zenana. Zenana is a West African fish that tastes like tofu. Not Zenana again for dinner.
West African fish that tastes like tofu. Could be that. Hopefully not.
In other words,
but tasteless. You never know. Or it could be something else. Arnie, what do you say?
It's Zenana, as in an Arab potentate's sense of favoritism. It is the pecking order inside a harem. Need I say more?
The pecking order in a harem. First there's Shirley.
Yes. Right. First there's Shirley, then there's Hazel.
Then there's Hazel, right. What was the best thing about Shirley? Her friend Hazel. Right.
That's little Mel Brooks.
Very old joke. It could be that, or it could be something else. What say you, Paula?
Well, at first I thought it was a zebra's nana, but it's it is actually a weather event. A zenana is a foul desert wind that is a precursor to a dust storm.
You smell the zenana, and you know
the
sand.
It's like batten down the tents.
Batten down the heads.
They called the wind zenana.
That could be it. It could either be the foul-smelling wind, harbinger of a dust storm. It could be the pecking order in a harem, or it could be the West African fish that tastes like tofu. It is one of those three, believe it or not. And the choice, Francine, is yours.
I think I shall seek the counsel of my my colleagues. Colleagues?
Okay. How about eliminating a few? How can a desert wind be a precursor to a dust storm
and have a name only?
You could only call it that then after the dust storm.
No.
Because you say, well, that was clearly a zenana because it was a dust storm. You know, but you couldn't really know in advance if it's being a dust storm that it was a zenana. Bear with me. The editing will show that I'm making truly no sense whatsoever. And why would a dictionary say that something tastes like tofu?
That's Carolyn being Carolyn.
Oh, okay. So it's line up, ladies. It's zenana time.
You know, I'm not comfortable with any of these definitions, really.
You don't have to be. Comfort is not important.
If you cross a banana with a zipper, you have a really interesting and very handy fruit.
I'll tell you what. I'm inclined to go to the fish.
Really?
You know, I was feeling the same way. But I know, when Carolyn says something, you automatically distrust it.
No, I distrusted half of it, the tofu part.
Yeah, so...
I say let's go with the fish.
I'm going to support you because you're our leader.
Thank you. And you believe in chain of command.
That's right. I'm
going to say nothing because I'm getting really sleepy.
Okay. We're going with the fish.
Well, before they nod off completely over here, Francine has led the pack and said, Carolyn, that the zenana is the West African fish that may or may not taste like tofu. Is that, in fact, what it is?
The card reads, Zenana, please fake a definition.
It is not. 10 points for a successful bluff.
She got us again.
Okay, audience, it's your turn. What do you think? How many say the pecking order in a harem? How many say the foul desert wind? That's, well, that seems pretty definitive, Paula. This audience thinks that a zenana is a foul desert wind. Is that in fact what it is?
Zenana. Please fake a definition.
As you can. Because a zenana actually is...
The pecking order in a harem.
Is a zenana.
That's exactly what it says here.
For your team, Arnie. Good bluff.
We learned such fun things.
We did.
All right. Let's go on to round three. Poetry adjacencies.
Oh, boy.
For 10 points, please give me the famous line of poetry adjacent to the following. Carolyn.
Yes.
What are the iconic and desperate lines that occur in the stanza after this? We stuck nor breath nor motion, as idle as a painted ship upon a painted ocean.
I love the way you smell, like poetry in motion.
Can I go with water, water everywhere and not a drop to drink?
That's what you go with. 10 points. Very good. Water, water everywhere. Nor any drop to drink, really. But
yep.
Nor any drop to drink.
Nor any drop. Rime of the Ancient.
Rhyme of the Ancient Mariner by Samuel. What was the Mad Magazine one?
What?
What was the Mad Magazine Samuel Taylor Coleridge? It was...
The Rhyme of the Marinated Agent.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. Flash, try this one. What line follows? The only other sounds the sweep of easy wind and downy flake.
It's... I have miles to keep and miles to go before I sleep.
Well,
but I have promises to keep... Miles to go before I sleep.
Oh,
wait a second. He gives his harness bells to shake as if there's some mistake.
Right.
The only other sounds is sweep of easy wind and downy. The woods are lovely, dark, and deep.
There you go. The woods are lovely, dark, and deep. Very good. Yeah.
Thank you, Flash. That was pretty good.
Yeah. You know the whole poem, eh? That's good. Try this one, Arnie. Please give the romantic two lines that come before... Or leave a kiss, but in the cup, and I'll not look for wine.
Let's drink a cup of kindness.
Yet.
Oh, no.
No.
Can you say that again?
Please give the romantic two lines that come before. Or leave a kiss, but in the cup, and I'll not look for wine.
Oh, a loaf of bread, a jug of... No.
No.
And
thou beside me in the loaf.
Right. Yeah.
Come live with me and be my love. And
or leave a kiss, buddy.
Pleasures.
Gather ye rosebuds while ye may.
No, okay. It is not.
Gather your popcorn.
Is it Elizabeth Barrett Browning?
I'm sorry?
Is it Elizabeth Barrett Browning?
It is not.
No.
It's actually Ben Jonson.
Ben Jonson.
Oh. Well, then. I'll not look for wine.
I think we have to go to the other side. Tony, what is it?
Drink to me only with thine eyes.
Drink to me only with thine eyes.
And I will drink with mine.
And I will pledge with mine. Yes, very good.
Well,
to Celia.
I drank to
Ben Jonson. All right, try this one, Francine. What opening line precedes over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore?
Oh.
Yeah.
Speak forth.
Oh, once upon a midnight and dreary while I pondered weak and weary.
There it is, 10 points. Yeah. Very good. The Raven, Edgar Allan Poe.
I don't know.
These last two are hard, but let's see how we can do. What, Paula, defiant two lines follows? It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll.
There is nobody that I hate. I'll continue to rock and roll.
I'll give her points for that, but not 10.
Say it again now that it's been thrown off kilter.
Yes, it matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll. Oh, I don't know.
Is this from the French Revolution?
No, it is not, actually.
I think I've got it.
You think you have it?
I think.
It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll. Anyone from the other side want to help?
I am the captain of my fate. I am the master.
I am the master of my fate. I am the captain of my soul. Very good, Flash. That's right. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
And finally, Tony, we'll take either the preceding or the following line, two. I all alone beweep my outcast state.
Gee, it sounds like Shakespeare.
It should.
I alone. Well, you know, one of those Shakespeare lines.
Exactly.
You know, unforgettable, except for moments like this.
Yes. You think it's easy till you're sitting here.
Yeah. What's the middle line again?
I all alone beweep my outcast state.
I beweep my whoops and the happen kale snail. Somewhere, sounds like that.
No,
I draw
a blank slate. He's a tabula rasa over here. Anyone on the other side have any
tabula
idea?
Tabula rasa is good. What? Go ahead.
Romeo and Juliet, would this be
No?
No.
Audience?
Out damn spot.
Can I do count the clock?
No. When in disgrace with fortune and men's eyes. I all alone beweep my outcast state and trouble deaf heaven with my bootless cries. So no points for that.
Where's that from?
That's Sonnet 29. Let's go on to round four, which is Francine's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word. Two will bluff. 10 points, Arne, if you can find the rose among thorns. Please create a definition for the word tohu bohu.
Tohu bohu.
T-O-H-U-B-O-H-U. Tohu bohu. Ladies? So many ways to enjoy, says you. You can listen here each week, as we hope you do. You can attend a live performance or download any show in our archive. You can contribute a question to the show and achieve limited fame with a small but dedicated audience. And now there's the book, Says Us, Volumes 1 and 2, a tome of games for family and fellow travelers. All this and more at SaysYou.net, SaysYou. Briefly, Says You pauses, just long enough for a few interstitial announcements. We'll be right back. You can hear Says You again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at SaysYou.net. Just follow that show downloads link and find high-quality copies available. And here's a quick reminder, Says You stops in Portland, Maine, Stowe, Vermont, and Seattle, Washington, as part of its spring tour, Northern Tier Statements. You can find out the hows, the whys, the whens, the wheres, and the whatevers
at SaysYou.net. That's SaysYou. Just follow that Join the Fun link and find out how to join the fun of a live performance of Says You. That is Miss Ann Hooper and Miss Isabel Oliard. Thank you very much, folks, for giving us a lovely afternoon and a little time with the word tohu bohu. We will go first to Flash Wiley.
Thank you. I'm an old military man, and we used to have a term when things were totally out of whack and crazy and everything. We called that a fire drill, where things were disorganized. And so perhaps tohu bohu comes from the Japanese. I don't know, but anyhow, it is the term for something that's in complete disorder and disarray. You know, it's a totally dishevelment. Mm-hmm.
Complete disarray.
Tohu bohu.
You're in a state of tohu bohu. Could be that, or it could be something else. Francine?
Well, tohu bohu is a much more orderly affair than what you've described. It is a Nigerian betrothal ceremony.
A Nigerian betrothal ceremony. Is it tohu bohu? It could be that. Or it could be something else. What say you, Tony?
Well, Flash is right, to the extent that it's Japanese. If you've ever spent a Saturday night on the Ginza Strip, you'll probably notice that the locals have a propensity to overdo the sake and go hakiku all over the sidewalk. Well, bohu, tohu bohu is what precedes the hakikuing. It means drinking to excess.
Drinking to excess. Japanese, you say.
Hike.
When the Japanese drink to excess, they tohu bohu. It could be that, the drinking to excess. It could be the Nigerian betrothal ceremony, or it can be complete disarray and disorder. It's one of those three, and the choice, Arnie, yours.
How about a Japanese laxative?
That's tofu bohu.
Yeah. Tofu bohu.
Right.
Well, it sure sounds Japanese.
Sure does, yeah. Yeah.
It's like I've heard it before, and I'm trying to figure out which one.
It sounds like
it could be, but I just have this feeling it's drinking to excess, which has... I have no reason for saying that, except some little voice inside, which is often best ignored.
So, no, the little voices speak to you, too.
Hmm? Well, when you two stop talking to each other, what do you think? What would you go with?
What would I go with? Either disarray or drinking to excess.
Yeah.
Well, all right, I'll go with what Paula said. I'll go with Tony there. And drinking to excess.
That's the team's decision?
Well, sort of.
Okay.
Just to move it along.
Right.
Yeah. It's either that or... Right.
Tony, they have come to the team decision that tohu bohu is drinking to excess. Is that, in fact, what it is?
Well, the description of the activity is indeed correct, based upon my personal experience. But tohu bohu does not mean that.
It does not. Wow. That was a bluff.
That was a bluff.
Okay, audience, it's your turn. What do you think?
Disarray.
How many say disarray? How many say the Nigerian betrothal ceremony? Ooh, close. I don't know. That's awfully close. I really couldn't tell, but someone up there was telling the truth. Who was it?
Tohu bohu. Complete disorder or dishevelment.
It is tohu bohu. 10 points.
Okie doke.
For Francine's team.
This week's Spotlight Round comes at the request of Bill Foster of Boston, Massachusetts. Bill writes, "Every time I hear the show now, I think back to those days at the Codman Estate in Lincoln, Massachusetts, when the audiences were tiny and, most important, food was served. I went to a show there about a dozen years ago in early March and had a wonderful time with words like sesquipedalian. Could you find those shows and feature them as a spotlight round? We found that show, Bill, from season 3, when Barry Nolan joined the gang for a round of definitions and derivations.
For 5 points, define, and for an additional 5, divine the derivation of the following words. Carolyn,
mm-hmm.
Meander.
Who?
Meander?
Meander.
Meander is to sort of ramble in not a very straightforward kind of way.
Sounds good to me.
Yes.
All right. To wander about it, ramble.
To wander as without plan.
Yes. Yes.
You wander, meander.
Yes, well, any help from
that's
that
all
side
I've got.
The derivation?
Meander.
Any help from the other side?
Does it have anything to do with a river?
It has everything to do with a river.
With the sort of wanderingly aimless river of meander.
Yes, it's
the Soviet Republic.
Actually, it's East Meander. Yes,
East Meander that eventually opens into the Pacific.
It's nowhere near there. It's an eponymous river in Turkey.
Oh, it is.
Which meanders down toward
the Bosphorus.
Ephesus, I'm told.
Where all the eponymous go. And
Tony,
yes.
Decimate.
To decimate means to completely obliterate, but it actually comes from an old, I believe, Roman tradition of taking one out of every 10 people and killing them as an act of retribution.
And that is also the first definition still given in Webster's today. That's exactly right. 10 points. It is literally to kill every 10th man, to decimate,
really?
The punishment suffered by Roman legions who disgraced themselves in battle.
What an interesting usage of the word mate.
Uh-huh. Arnie?
Yes, we got points.
They get 10 points for that, and you got 5 points for yours.
All right.
Whoopee. Yep.
Arnie?
Yeah.
Sesquipedalian. S-E-S-Q-U-I-P-E-D... A-L-I-A-N, sesquipedalian.
It's one half of a bicycle.
I think it means
sesquicentennial.
You know,
which
is 150.
You know, it means having
so
a
it has 150 feet.
That's right.
It has 150 feet.
Well, actually, it's
no.
one and a half.
One and a half.
Sesqui.
One and a half feet.
Do you have any idea of the definition of the word?
Yes.
We do.
Yes, the other side does.
Sesquipedalian.
One and a half feet.
You're going to get points for the one and a half feet.
One and a half feet.
One and a half
sesquipedalian.
Is one and a half, right? It's Latin.
One
yeah.
and
what
a half
do you mean?
Is correct. Let me go to the other side for the meaning.
Francine and I are disputing whether it means he who uses or she who uses very long words or a very long word in and of itself.
Well, it's both. Accurate.
Oh, good.
Yes. It is given to the use of long words or having many syllables.
There
it is
you go.
Both. From the Latin sesque, which means one and a half, and ped, foot, meaning a word that's a foot and a half long.
Oh, feet like feet in poetry.
Yeah,
and that sort of, those kind of feet. All right.
Give them 5 points for that because they got the foot and a half. Francine, embouchure, E-M-B-O-U-S-C-H-U-R-E. Embouchure.
That is what... You know,
never heard. Yes,
remember,
of course.
Right there, in a trumpet.
When you blow a trumpet, it's the vibration of the lips.
Now, see,
it
I
the
wanna...
correct formation of the lips, is it not?
You know, we're going to get all kinds of mail on this. I always thought that embouchure was necessary to play brass instruments, trumpets, and things like that. But the dictionary says wind.
Wind.
Wind instruments.
For a clarinet. For a
write in and let us know. But yes, it is.
For
and
flute.
The derivation.
The derivation, Francine.
Boosh.
Yeah,
family
Actually,
mouse.
That is one of the... Boosh. Yeah, give them 10 points for that.
Thank you.
Paula, vaccinate.
Vaccinate means to administer vaccine via needle into a body.
Well,
not necessarily by needle.
That's true.
Okay, well, it means to administer vaccine.
Cowpox. Cowpox.
It did come from
cowpox.
That is correct. To vaccinate is to immunize from disease
right.
by controlled exposure
right.
of some variety.
Edward
it is from
Jenner.
The Latin word for cow,
vaca,
or waka, I guess, would be correct.
Well, if you happen to be a walking Latin, you know.
Right, yes, right. Vache in French, whatever. Because the first successes in that process were against cowpox.
Cowpox.
10 points for that. Very good. Barry... Rival, R-I-V-A-L, rival.
Rival is to to compete with or to be in competition with.
Yes.
Alpo.
And The derivation of that?
Yes.
Would be...
I love this derivation. It's the reason
Tony, you're our Latin guy.
Oh, I'm sorry, but I'm eating right now. They don't give you time for lunch on this job. What can I do?
This is worse
than
you
know, Laura told me right from the beginning, don't serve food. She said that right off.
Where did you lose control of this whole thing?
Welcome back to What Are You Eating?
It is from the Latin for revel, which is to have two sides of a river.
That's exactly right. 10 points. If
other side of the river.
If you could see the look on his face, yeah.
Barry just did a mind meld with the spirit of the language.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere, he got the answer to that.
It is from Revalis, a Roman term for a landowner on a river. People who lived on either side of a river would often compete for fish, water, and general...
You knew that.
That's our spotlight round for this week. If there's a memorable moment you haven't heard in years, let us know. We'll send our crack staff into the archives and do our best to find your favorite. You can register your choice at SaysYou.net. That's SaysYou. That's our look back. Now, back to the present.
Let's close today. Hall of Famer Gary Russell of Melbourne, Florida, checks back in this week with some collaborations that never were. For each pair of authors given, the last word of the title of the first work matches the first word of the title of the second work, creating a collaboration that never was. For example, if I gave you Herman Woke and James Norman Hall, it would be the Kane Mutiny on the Bounty.
Right.
So we get where we're going here?
Yeah.
Ooh, we got a new
one. I'm going here.
All right. Try this one, Carolyn.
Mm-hmm.
Collaboration that never was, Beatrix Potter and John Updike.
Oh, Rabbit. It would be
Peter Rabbit Redux.
You know what? Good enough. The Tale of Peter Rabbit and Rabbit Run or Rabbit Redux. Very good. 10 points. Try this one, Flash. The collaboration between Jonathan Swift and John Steinbeck.
Oh, yeah. Let's see, Steinbeck.
Gulliver's Travels with Charlie
is exactly right. 10 points. Gulliver's Travels and Travels with Charlie. All right, let's get a little harder. Try this one, Arnie. E.B. White, the collaboration between E.B. White and W.R. Burnett.
Elements of
Charlotte's Web.
Not that one. Can't be. E.B. White.
W.R. It's not the Oxbow incident, is it?
No, it's not. Oh, wow.
W.R. Burnett. Oh, boy.
Well, what's the E.B. White one? Maybe that would. Which
well,
one would
Charlotte's
you?
Charlotte's Web, Elements of Style.
Yeah.
You're going to third book somewhere.
I hope I'm right with this. Excuse me.
Did he write a...
there's
oh, you're going on
that.
Maybe it was T-Bone Burnett.
Is Burnett a Western?
No, not a Western.
We have half of it.
Oh, you do have half of it. What
yeah,
do you think?
Well, Stuart Little.
Oh, Stuart Little.
Stuart Little, Little.
Yes,
is correct.
We had Stuart Little.
Stuart Little.
Little House on the Prairie.
No, but a good guess, I'm sorry to say.
Stuart, Little. It's not Stuart Little Women, we
Little,
know that.
No, it's not Little Women.
Burnett.
W.R. Burnett wrote both the book and the screenplay, actually.
Oh, wow.
Of Little Shop of Horrors.
No, but another great guess.
Little.
Got to go back further. No, I don't think they're going to get it.
Wow.
I gave them a
Little Deuce Coop.
No. Anyone on the other side?
No.
Anyone in the audience? Little Caesar.
Oh, Little exactly Caesar. Right. Oh, my
Little
God.
Little Princess was Frances Hodgson Burnett,
no,
which is what I was thinking
yeah,
of,
right.
too.
No,
Stuart Little Caesar.
We'd be here to February.
Yeah, be here till February. Okay.
Forget it.
Well, I'm sorry. That was the hard one. So should I give Francine the hard one or the easy one?
The easy one.
How about the hard one?
How about the hard
No, I'm going to give her the one that came next. We'll try that.
The one
all right,
that came
Francine,
next.
Try this one. The collaboration between Joseph Conrad and Arthur Kessler.
Oh.
Somebody had to get it.
Heart of Darkness at Noon.
10 points. Very good. Well, someone had to get it. Try this one, Paula. I like this one. The collaboration between Zane Grey and Edith Wharton.
Oh, brother.
I just like the image of Zane Grey
and Edith Wharton
working
on
something.
Him in his cowboy hat.
Riders of the Purple Sage. And what's...
Sage of some street, right?
No, it's not Sage. It's...
Oh.
The Age of Innocence.
There you go. Oh. The Age of Innocence.
That's a little weird.
Yes, it's Riders of the Purple Age of Innocence.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
I gave him 10 points.
That's not taught in grammar school usually.
Yes. And finally, Tony, try this one. The combination Saint-Exupéry and C.S. Lewis.
The Prince.
Little Prince.
C.S. Lewis.
What, the Witch in the Wardrobe.
Yeah, I know.
C.S. Lewis.
Is it Little Prince?
It is Little Prince.
Little Prince of...
There's a C.S. Lewis book.
Little Prince of Darkness.
It's not Prince of Thieves. Is it Prince of Thieves?
It is not.
Princess and the...
Does the other side
lion.
Know? No.
Oh, no, you don't know. Sorry to say. Audience, help him out. Prince Caspian.
You didn't have to be that loud.
You did not get that last one, but it doesn't matter. A big day for you guys on a very tough day. 75 points. Winners this week, Francine Akbar's team. Congratulations. Hey.
Very tough.
That is all we have time for this week. Thanks so much to Stephen Hall and all the good folks here at Regis College in Weston, Massachusetts. Schur and Salkin write the words. Antonio Oliart mans the meters. And Zach Moore is the AP with the get up and go. We close this week with the thought that you know you're from Boston if anyone you don't know is a potential idiot until proven otherwise. or if you know that khakis are what you start the car with. That's how it is khakis, in Massachusetts. Khakis. And we'll see you all next week.
Support for SAYU in Weston, Massachusetts comes from Regis College. Graduate and undergraduate programs in the arts and sciences. On the web at regiscollege.edu. Benjamin, give him the skinny.
SAYU, created and produced by Pippin and Finch, Boston.
This is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 10 o'clock.